Blog Talk Radio.
Fasten your seatbelts. The foremost authority on 9/11, the best-selling author of Methodical Illusion, and a researcher extraordinaire, Rebecca Roth is about to step up to the microphone and launch into Reality Check, where the light will shine brightly upon the truth.
Live from Polly's Plantation on Merle's Inlet, South Carolina, home of the 63-yard par 5. It's the Rebecca Roth Show, and I'm Ramjet, the host, and with me is Rebecca Roth.
So, Ramjet, you're in Gator Country, eh?
Gator Country, yep.
Wowee kazowie. I just saw somewhere, scanning through the news the other day, I'm lost in time, so it could have been yesterday, actually, that there are Nile alligators,
crocodiles
in Florida.
Yes, I never golf in Florida.
And that's a good thing. And they're people eaters, aren't they all though? And when I
alligators
flying
are
purple people.
I mean,
eaters.
They can be dangerous, but you know, only if you go put your
are
golf
the
ball
Nile
on their
ones
nose.
Different?
Oh yeah.
So how'd they get here? Are they pet store?
Well, they're not sure exactly how they got there. I think they were either released or escaped.
It's creepy.
But they're way more aggressive than alligators.
Oh, my.
Alligators are, I mean, they're all over the golf courses down here. And people, for the most part, don't worry about them. I mean, if you hit your golf ball and it's close to an alligator, you get a drop. You don't need to go in and chase it. But basically, they just bask in the sun and they're not going to bother you. I mean, I've seen them. And I haven't ever been concerned about them. If it was a Nile crocodile, however, or a cougar, I would be concerned.
Well, there you go. I'll golf safely then. It's lots of stuff is going on today. We're going to talk about some things. I have some questions that some people asked me in my Facebook group that I posted we're going to do the show, and if anybody had any questions about anything. So let me just kind of get to those if I can first. Then we're going to talk about Egypt Air, and there's some great breaking news about the black boxes, apparently. And so first the question someone asked me in my Facebook group is regarding the Pentagon footage, what happened to it? Well, you'll remember there was some 85 or 88 different cameras around the Pentagon. If you just look up on a Google image, 9/11 Pentagon, you'll see right at the top all those cameras that are there that were aimed right at that whatever it was that hit the Pentagon, but it wasn't the 757. And what happened, not just those cameras along the Pentagon, up along the top there and all around town, there were gas stations and other mini markets and businesses surrounding hotels surrounding the Pentagon that also captured something. And the FBI was there within the 30 minutes of whatever it was that did hit the Pentagon. And they confiscated all of the cameras from all of the businesses and got all the footage from the Pentagon. So the answer to that question is the FBI. And those the footage has been sealed, I believe, you know, like the John F. Kennedy information for forever or for 50 years or some unsaid thing. So it's not the 28 pages that people should be screaming about. If you really want to know the truth about what hit the Pentagon, you'd be screaming about those 85 cameras. That's really what you'd be screaming about. But nobody screams about it. People just want to know, is Ramjet really Brent Bozell?
He golfs like Brent
Bozell.
That's
my favorite conspiracy. You're Brent Bozell. Yeah, I know he is Brent Bozell. Okay, so anyway, Ramjet has made it to the big time, haven't you? He's the conspiracy, the 9/11 conspiracy nut job. Spinning conspiracies about his whereabouts. And as you know, he's all over the map. What he does, who he is, what he looks like, and is he really Brent Bozell? No, he is not Brent Bozell. He's Ramjet. So.
Oh, darn.
I can maybe get to golf a vacation with Brent Bozell. You guys can golf together. Maybe do a show together. That might convince him that you're really not Brent Bozell. It's so silly, isn't it? But it's interesting, you know, I'm just a human like everyone else. And it's really weird when the conspiracy nuts turn on you and turn you into a conspiracy. It's nothing about me. I didn't write a book about me, but I might. I didn't think anybody would be interested. And I wrote a book, I was actually writing three books, but two of them are on the market, about 9/11 and what I discovered as an airline employee and what really happened. So,
a little bird told me that you've been researching your butt up this week.
Yes, indeed, I have. That birdie must have flown.
And that you weren't doing
my...
as much writing as you should have done.
Oh, I've gotten pretty good writing done, actually, but I've done a lot of research. Because I keep going down these holes, and people keep coming forward with information that I have to follow up on. So I've taken a few trips to actually go and be at the area where I'm writing about or where things took place, and I get the feel, and it's much easier to write that way. It's kind of time consuming, but okay. The next question someone asked me was there any gold to be had? And I'm assuming that question is in regards to the World Trade Center. Yes, there was gold to be had, but it probably, most of which had been removed prior to the explosions that took down the World Trade Center towers. You'll recall there is part of the story that there were a couple trucks found trying to leave, but something broke down or their axles broke or something, and they couldn't get out before the explosion and the collapse of the building. So there's a part in the methodical illusion about that, and I worked Kurt Sonnenfeld's true life story and what happens when the FEMA photographer goes down and finds the vaults were empty, because some of them were. There were lots of lots of buildings besides the Tower 1 and 2 and Tower 7 that a lot of people still don't know fell down that afternoon after not being hit by an aircraft. There was a building 4, 5, and 6. And in building 4, I believe it was, the Bank of Nova Scotia had huge vaults of precious gold, precious metals and gold and silver, and precious, I believe they had some jewels as well besides the precious metals. And about 1/10 of said claimed gold was recovered. Although the media said that it was 100% recovered, we know that's a lie. Oh, I can imagine the media lying. Well, we're going to talk about a little bit more about the media lying to us. Okay, the next question someone asked was about the dancing Israelis, the five dancing Israelis that were caught in New Jersey by the woman who saw them dancing in and on top of a white van parked outside of her home, her apartment. And she called the police, and the police came. And these... first, they tried to tell the police, we're not your problem. We're the Palestinians are your problem. We're Israelis. Well, as the police continued to check into their behavior, because they were watched by this woman holding up lighters, flicking in front of and taking pictures of, so the towers collapsing and burning and smoking behind their lighter would show up in the pictures. They later went home to Israel after we released them. I think they were here for, I want to say about a month, but don't count me on that because it's not my expertise. I just remember reading their story. But it seems like they were here and held by the Department of Justice and later on freed by Michael Chertoff for about a month, 30 days or thereabouts. And they went back to Israel. And in my group on Facebook, and if you just Google search this on the YouTube, you can find it. They actually go back and they're on a television set and they actually brag. And one of the things they say is that we were, quote, sent to document the event. And everybody wants to know by whom. Who sent the five dancing Israelis, which were later on reported by the controlled media as being Middle Eastern. Well, that's not really a total lie now, is it? Because Israel's right there in the Middle East. But it led people to believe that they were Arabs and that they were celebrating. But really, they were five dancing Israelis. Somewhere on one of my notes down around my table right now is surrounded with notes. I have their names, actually, of the five dancing Israelis that I've actually found and recently was kind of looking to see if there were similar names in the DEA report and of the artists that were involved to living in the tower.
Ramjet wasn't one of them, was it?
No.
Oh.
Ramjet is safe. Okay, the next question I got, and this was the last one I got about 9/11, is who made the decision to not secure the crime scene. I'm assuming this is around the World Trade Center. It was secured. It was secured right away in the fact that they weren't about to let anyone in there, but the trucks lined up surprisingly quickly. And even people from New York to this day send me emails and say, I was living in Manhattan, and those trucks that were hauling away the debris and the cranes and those trucks that were taking things out to the landfill and clearing the debris piles from the World Trade Center towers and Building 7 were there on the scene, like, to them, what seemed like immediately. Like, how did they get all those trucks into the city? And you don't, in the city, you don't see a lot of those kind of trucks. And so they found that was really unusual. But they also very, very quickly, and this is coming from people that have written me really lengthy stories of their own personal experience, very, very quickly, they put, what do you call that, cyclone fencing around the debris piles. And they secured it, and they had, you can look back and see this, because this shows up in a lot of pictures, a lot of Kurt Sonnenfeld's pictures from the FEMA photographer, Kurt Sonnenfeld, are online. So you can go find them in the Google images and stuff. But they show you a placard, like a metal placard or paper sign or something. There's all kinds of them there, so you'll see different ones. They say no cameras allowed. And he was the only one, I guess, the FEMA photographers, I think there was a couple of them, that were allowed to be with cameras in that area. So it was secured. But the crazy part of this, now we know, we're going to talk about an airplane crash here pretty quick. So we know what happens normally when there's an airplane crash, which we had supposedly into the North and South Tower. Is the people that come on are the FAA and the National Transportation Safety Board. They were not involved in this at all. The investigation was given to FEMA. And now, interestingly enough, FEMA was doing a drill in Manhattan scheduled for that day, and they had come in the night before on the 10th of September and were right down along the waterfront at one of the piers where they'd set up their command and control center for this major drill that they were going to have in Manhattan on September 11th, which of course went live, didn't it, after something hit those towers. So that's the thing that I think is interesting. It's not that they didn't secure the scene. They didn't do any investigation. They removed the scene, and they fenced it in, and then they protected it from cameras, which is very suspicious behavior. And I have to say, I guess that if you were to ask the question of who made that decision, it had to come from the White House. And, you know, I guess somebody had to have told FEMA, you're in charge of an investigation that should be FAA and the National Transportation Safety Board, and nothing should have been removed. They should have looked for passengers. They should have looked for airplane parts. They should have looked, and this should have been the professionals who do it. It was usually the National Transportation Safety Board. And none of that happened. As a matter of fact, I don't even believe the National Transportation Safety Board was even allowed at the scene, if I remember correctly. So very odd behavior for an airplane crash and for an investigation of an airplane crash, supposedly is what that was. So I mean, those were great questions. And, you know, there's always questions. There's always things that are really hard to understand. And I said this before, I think last week, you know, the hardest thing for me when I first discovered the hijackers were still alive, because I was as brainwashed as everyone else. I believed the story that I saw. It was unbelievable to me as an airline professional, but I never really dug that deep into it until I discovered that at least 10 of the hijackers were still alive. And then people that are involved in intelligence, they were saying, well, those other 9, they could be completely made up, complete fictitious characters, kind of like the people in my novels. And I thought, well, gee, now that's really interesting, because as I read about them, oftentimes of those 9, the official story was very little is known about, you know, so-and-so. Very little is known. Well, very little is known because very little was made up, because the person doesn't exist. Now, there's some passengers I've also found that really didn't exist much prior to 9/11 as well. One of them was a gentleman on Flight 11. And he basically didn't have any career or any anything much beyond right in front of 9/11. And he was associated with a Mossad company as well. We haven't really ever talked about him, but thinking about maybe working his little story into book three. I don't know if I can, but after this book comes out, we'll talk about him. And so anyway, that's kind of where we're at with the whole 9/11 thing. And what I want to talk about now is what's going on with Egypt Air. So have you paid much attention to that, Ramjet?
Well, I noticed that it was a couple of nights ago, I guess. You know, I'd been watching a basketball game, and I saw that there had been an airplane crash. And, you know, what immediately now in the back of my mind, whenever there's an airplane crash, I know it's going to be 24-hour wall-to-wall coverage on CNN.
Sure.
So, you know, I flipped over to CNN, and sure enough, they'd gathered the troops. You know, they were there waiting, you know, wanting to talk about what it is. And they talk it to death. And whether they know stuff or whether they don't know stuff, they just keep talking and talking and talking, and they throw out every possible scenario that you could possibly imagine, to where if you pay any attention to them at all, you're so mixed up and confused as to what happened that it almost doesn't matter. But I think the thing that bothers me the most in all of this is, why do you have to be wall-to-wall coverage day in and day out and day in and day out for an airplane crash? If a train crashes with 200 people on board and 67 people die, mm-hmm. They mention it. They may show you some pictures.
Never talk about it the next day.
But they don't talk about it all day long every day until, you know, you're just sick to death of it. Anyway, so that was my, you know, first impression is. And then, of course, because I know you, I know that this is a sort of thing that just absolutely – you know, sends you into orbit, and that you pay attention to whatever they say.
But
I would talk to you and find out really what happened.
I park in front of the media and a laptop when stuff like this happens. And I was up real late that night watching this whole thing unfold. And here's the thing that I first noticed. Now, and after the veil lifted, I guess, and I started to wake up after the 9/11 stuff, and I found those hijackers are still alive, I started to see things that were really kind of oddball. And I thought, well, okay, if these guys weren't on board, how did all this happen? And thus the books came about. Well, here's what I noticed. The first people that they were talking to were retired CIA. Well, okay, if you're retired living in Telluride, Colorado, how do you know what's going on in the Middle East? You're not retired.
Could I correct you? There's no such thing as a retired CIA.
Well,
you may not be getting your paycheck every month in the same denomination that you got when you were active, but once CIA,
always
CIA.
And I never was, by the way, for those conspiracy nut professors that are out there listening in, because I know they do. It's just nonsensical. Actually, I got some email messages today from someone in Australia that had discovered some of the wacky professors' crazy nonsensical YouTubes and said, what's the deal with this person? Like, why don't you ask him? But anyway, we went on and had a great relationship, and he was happy that he had talked to me. And people probably be listening to the show.
Well, so my question is, all right, a plane has crashed. Why do you bring CIA agents on? What is it the benefit to them, unless you want to talk about terrorism?
Here's what they're pushing. And so if you have eyes to see and ears to hear, you'll sit down in front of your television and ask yourself this. How are they brainwashing me? Because we know the CIA is in control of the media, and they have an agenda. And what is that agenda? Terrorists, Middle Eastern terrorists, Muslim terrorists, ISIS, blah, blah, blah. So I looked again this morning when I got up and made my latte, and they're still pushing the same thing. And I got some different guys now. Peter Bergen, who I'm like, well, okay, this guy, all he's done, he's been a journalist and a writer of terrorism, and he's Jewish. So we're going to get a real good opinion from him. So he's sitting there, and, you know, most of these television journalists are somehow connected to the CIA. Even if you read Anderson Cooper's Wikipedia, it tells you here he was. He didn't have to probably ever really work for much, considering who his mom was.
Well, this is kind of like after I watch my basketball game, instead of having Charles Barkley and Shaq talk about what happened, you bring out a couple of chefs from the Food Network and they talk about what happened. And I'm thinking, This is not good.
Exactly. So I'm listening to these guys and they're just terrorism, terrorism, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, terrorism, ISIS, Al-Qaeda. Well, wait a minute. Now, like what, 5 years ago, we had Obama telling us that Al-Qaeda was decimated and we killed their leaders. And we actually just killed another leader. It was on the headline of, I think it was on CNN earlier, that it's the... we've probably killed this guy 6 or 7 times already, but it's one of their main leaders from them. We somewhere, I don't know, it's Afghanistan or someplace, to pay much attention because it's all just hokey pokey. But what they're pushing is the terrorist agenda.
Well, you know, they're talking about it and they have absolutely zero evidence.
Well,
at that time, they had no plane parts.
Mm-hmm.
They had no idea exactly where the plane went down. They had no idea what it was that caused the plane to go down. They knew nothing, absolutely nothing. And all they wanted to talk about was
the
possibility that there was a bomb that was placed on board in Paris.
Oh, yeah. They even figured out that it was a pop can on that Russian flight. It was a bomb in a pop can. And it could be the galley people. It could be the flight attendants. It could be the pilots like MH370. And they ripped those pilots apart. Listening to this, and I do it, it's kind of like entertainment now, but I started to look at this and I thought right away, well, interesting that they're talking. Maybe the aviation specialists were all, neatly tucked in bed or on vacation. But they're talking to these CIA guys, Bob, Bayer is his last name. And he comes from Telluride, Colorado, and he's in there. He's CIA. And we know that most of them are somehow connected to the CIA. So CIA is pushing an agenda. Well, we know their involvement in 9/11 and other things, the Kennedy assassination and all these things.
Well, one of the things you have taught me about airplane crashes is that the very first question you need to ask, was it a Boeing plane or was it an Airbus? Now, why is that? Why did you teach me that?
Well, you know, it's kind of an inside deal, but when the Airbus first came out, we referred to it in the airline industry as the scare bus. Well, I should tell you everything you need to know. The Airbus is different than a lot of the aircraft like the Boeing aircraft. Some of the newer Boeings may be this way. I just haven't kept up because I'm not flying. But the Airbus is what's considered fly-by-wire. And so what that means, basically, in short, is that it's a computerized aircraft. And I jokingly, I know, was saying to Ramjet earlier before the show, it's like HAL. Remember in the 2001 Space Odyssey, Dave, I don't want you to come in. I'm gonna. The computer took over, right? So you remember the Space Odyssey 2001, where HAL, the computer, decided that he was in control, and he was tired of being told what to do, and he controlled the ship. He controlled the food, he controlled the air, he controlled the doors and everything. Well, the Airbus, in a sense, is kind of like that. It's a computerized aircraft, and there's a picture that I put in my Facebook group to show people, and it's a picture of a bunch of the pilots, I think a couple of the pilots that actually died in this crash, and there's like 5 guys, and they're sitting around in a cockpit, and you see the wall behind them, and those are all circuit breakers. And they're behind the right side of the aircraft, which is behind the co-pilot. That wall of the cockpit is all circuit breakers from, maybe 3 feet high up, clear up to the ceiling. And they're little, you'll see it, it's a little gray wall. And it's got little like buttons all over it. You can see them. They're little light, like looking button type things. So they're very different background. But when you know what you're looking at, like I did, I was like, whoa, circuits. Well, that on the other side of the inside the cabin, the other side of that wall basically is the galley. And inside the galley, what do? We heat ovens. We heat the food in ovens, right? Electric ovens. And we make hot water for tea and coffee. And we have the hot water heater. And then when you pull out the little lower part of the coffee maker, it's a hot plate to keep the coffee hot while it's sitting there after you brew it. So you've got a lot of electricity right there. And then when I got up earlier this morning, I started to see that ACARS, maybe this was really late last night, because I was actually up a couple times looking into this, because it is my thing, that the ACARS, which is a text message type system from the airplane, and it is such a computerized aircraft that when something goes wrong, for instance, one of the things that it flagged, and this happened about 3 minutes before they lost radar, is the windshield in front of the co-pilot and the pilots, the windows, the windshields in front are, because it's really super cold outside, like, you know, minus 50 or so, really, really cold weather, that they're actually heated, the windshields, and that the windshield heater was showing an overheat. And the ACARS, the computer system of the airplane, picked that up and sent a text message down through the ACARS system to the ground. And then it showed another window. And so there were three, I believe, windshields or windows in the cockpit, the windshields, because they're kind of segments, that they were overheating, that there were, the heating element was going awry. And then it showed that the avionics, the computer, it showed the autopilot was malfunctioning. Well, okay, you can still fly the airplane a little bit. I don't know if it's a Boeing, but this aircraft is so computerized that when the next thing that went was called the avionics or the flight computer, you cannot take this aircraft and fly it manually. Once the computer has malfunctioned, HAL has the spaceship, basically. And it, you don't have any way of controlling it. So it sounds like, to me, right now from what I've seen, not a bomb, because smoke detectors went off. And when you have a smoke detector, now the smoke detectors can go off if there's a decompression in the cabin, but these are usually located just in the lavatories. They're not in the ceiling, in the cabin part, so they're usually there. But inside the aircraft cabin, when you have a decompression, like a rapid decompression, it causes like a fog. Fills up really quick. Just so you know, if you're ever flying and this happens to you, it sounds like a cannon goes off, boom, and then all of a sudden the cabin fills with fog, like a dry ice kind of fog comes up, right? But instant, it poof, like that. Well, that same, that fog will set off these smoke detectors too. Is anything like smoke? And if you go into the bathroom and try to have a cigarette, and it's not legal to do, it's going to set that thing off, right? Well, in those computerized aircraft, maybe some of the newer Boeing are, like the Dreamliner and the 777 and stuff, are more fly-by-wire, more computerized. But the Airbus, in particular, if the smoke detector goes off, it sends a message on ACARS, the smoke detector's going off. And so we, as a flight crew, the flight attendants, we hear it. It's very loud, just like your ones in your home. And then we go and we make sure that it's not on fire. Or somebody maybe had a cigarette and threw it in the paper trash or something. Or there's something else. There's a hot water heater in there, too, underneath the sink. There's a hot water heater. That's why you have hot water in there. It's not just freezing cold water. It also has to keep the water that's in the lines from freezing and stuff. So we go in. When there's a protocol that we follow when you hear a one go off. And then we go into each of the lavatories and make sure that none of the walls are hot. You heard what I just said. None of the walls are hot. One of the lavatories is right behind the captain. And so if the sink, which is on that same wall right behind the cockpit, is hot or there's a fire in there or something has happened or shorted out, that's what we do. We test with the back of our hand, you know, and make sure that it's not hot before we open the door, because we don't want to fuel the fire with more oxygen by opening the door and giving it a big blast of air. So with these protocols that we follow, and we also grab a fire extinguisher, which are usually located right next to the lavatories, or right by the jump seats, actually. So, and they're usually right by a lavatory. So we have all these protocols that we follow, because one thing you don't want to have happen to you is a fire at in a pressurized cabin at altitude. And you definitely don't want to have this happen. What happened on this particular aircraft, something, it sounds like, shorted out, perhaps. There could have been some kind of mechanical, and this can be as simple as two wires rubbing over each other over a 15-year period and shorting out and arcing in that big circuit breaker board wall in the cockpit. And what happens when that happens is whatever it's affecting, it could have affected their radios. It could have affected the, obviously, it affected their onboard computers eventually, because the windshields showed overheat. The pilots weren't doing anything that we know of. They weren't talking to the radio saying, oh, we're having all this stuff. But ACARS is sending these messages immediately. You don't have to text them in or anything. The aircraft computer sends them.
Now, if a bomb had gone off, obviously the plane would rapidly have decompressed.
Right.
Would that have shorted out the ACARS system?
Yes. Yeah. It would not be in sending messages, and it would probably not have said smoke. Because what happens when you have a bomb is the fuselage is violently ripped apart. And so everything stops. And I think we remember the German Wings plane. And you'll remember that I said that I thought that was either a new weapon. We have some weapons now. Besides lasers, we have high frequency energy weapons. And some of those were in southern Germany, in U.S. military bases there. And there was a drill going on there as well. And so I tell you that the Airbus is highly sensitive to electronic pulses. So if you're using an energy weapon, some sort of energy beam, and what triggered me on that is after 9/11, the airplanes were all, the cockpit door was replaced by a bulletproof and grenade-proof door. So if we had a grenade or a bomb go off on in the galley or in the lavatory, the door would have survived, I guess. They'll find the door in the ocean. I mean, the whole thing was just so crazy, because if you set off a bomb in an aircraft, it is going to blow the fuselage apart and everything will stop. On an Airbus like that, you're not going to see 3 minutes of the Airbus saying, hey, your window's hot. Now your autopilot's no longer working. Now your whole flight computer is inoperative. And that's why you saw that airplane coming out of the sky in weird ways.
Well, you know, last week we talked about the TSA and all of the problems that are associated with that. And I noticed in some of the literature this week that they say that the lines are only going to get longer, things are only going to get worse. And then you look at this. Now, you know, it's still too early to tell really what happened with this Egyptian Air Flight 804. You know, it could have been terrorism, or it could have been some kind of mechanical, who knows. But the point is it's like they're using this accident to bolster the fact that these 3 hour, 4 hour lines are great, because if it was terrorism, you'll be glad you stood in line for 4 hours and you got on an airplane that was safe and wasn't going to have any kind of problems. And I think that's just reprehensible.
Well, it is. And it's really kind of interesting, because that was one of the other things that I saw, was all of a sudden, not only were we hearing terrorism, 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 when I'm looking at, no, if you got smoke and you got the computer talking, ACARS computer talking for 3 minutes, telling you this is going wrong, this is going down, and this is no longer working. And then, obviously, nothing was working. And the airplane is not a glider. It's not going to stay up there. They were at around 37,000 feet. Now, apparently, the airplane came down to about 15,000 feet. Now, it seemed like what I was reading indicated that they sort of stopped, or they tried to turn, or something happened. But still, you're coming out of the sky 37,000 feet. Even if at 15,000 feet, you're coming down like a rock. What you saw, now that I've had people come on, excuse me, on Facebook and claim it was alien abductions. Other people think it was a remote control kidnapping. There is plane debris. I have seen a tennis shoe. I've seen a white purse. I've seen seats. Remember, your seat bottom is a flotation device. The seat bottoms, and they will come up, because they usually come unbolted. The seats are all bolted together as two or three seats in a row, bolted to the floor, and they usually break off.
Well, I know the seats were, you know, pretty well twisted, and that was another reason that some of these analysts were saying, oh, it had to have been an explosion. Only an explosion could have twisted metal like that.
No,
but if you fall out of the sky and you're falling like a rock and you hit the ocean or anything else, you'd be surprised what gets twisted.
Yeah, well, that's true. It is not at all crazy. But there's lots of parts. I mean, there's a life vest and nobody in it. And it looks like the life vest has just been ripped out of the plastic bag. Now, if you have ever flown international. The life vests, they're all the same on every airline, and they're underneath the seat, underneath your seat, and they're in a plastic bag, has a little pull thing that opens it, and then they're in a like a cloth velcroed tab that closes it down so you, and so they don't fall out on landing, basically. So it does not look like we have people that had time to don their life vests. This is something we look at because if you have, excuse me, a mechanical where the pilots know they're going to ditch the aircraft, they're going to land in the water, the flight attendants are going to tell you you need to put your life vests on and how to handle the children or the infants and how to put the life vests on for them and prepare the cabin. So all of the bodies that they find would be connected to life vests, or you'd see life vests that were around. But some people, not all of them, but some people will still have them on. Some people, some bodies will hit the water. And this is horrible to talk about, but it's a reality. Certainly a reality I dealt with for, you know, 30 plus years. So, but this is what happens. When you hit the body or the water going that, it's like hitting a brick wall. And so it's not much different than a really high impact, you know, car accident, but super high impact, right? So you're finding, they are finding body parts. They aren't telling us what kind of parts, but I did see a shoe. So I don't know if there was a foot in it. There could have been when they found it. I don't know. There isn't very much information that's been released yet, but when we started,
you did say something about finding the black boxes.
Yeah,
what was
just
that?
Right at the start of this, just right before we started our show, CBS is reporting out of Alexandria, Virginia, that they have located the black boxes. And so I'm hoping that's true, because that's going to be very, very telling. And it's near the area where they found the human remains and the debris that they just found. So those,
but they haven't mentioned anything about finding pieces of fuselage or
if they found the black boxes, they are connected to the tail section, and that's usually found in one really large piece. Remember when we saw Air Asia, and it did the same thing in Indian Ocean or in Indonesia, somewhere in there, and it fell out of the sky. It was also an Airbus. And eventually they found that big tailpiece. I remember seeing it come out when they craned it out of the water. And both of the flight data recorder and the cockpit voice recorder are located back there. And remember, the tail section is usually a really safe place to be, partly because it does break off. And but both of the black boxes are there. And according to this, it looks like they have located them by their pings. Now, a black box will ping. It's like it'll send out like a sonar kind of a ping, like a ding, ding. And there's machines where you can hear it in the water, and it'll send that ping out for 30 days. It, give or take, it may take a little bit longer if it's in a different temperature of water. So if it's colder, it may ping shorter or longer, but roughly 30 days of pinging. So I know they were talking about bad weather coming into this area, and that this might cause a problem. And as soon as we were getting ready to do the show, and I sat down here and I was just pulling up the last minute stuff, this was at 5:33 p.m. Eastern time. So it was just right as I was getting ready. It looks like they have found them. Now, if they've just found them pinging, then that means they have to figure out what depth. And I haven't read all the articles, so I don't know what depth they've found them, if they even know what depth it is. But once they find them, and that'll be finding a rather large section of the tail, they usually find a big section of the wings, and they'll probably find some larger sections of the fuselage. And in the case of Air Asia, they found a lot of people still strapped to their seats. And so you're going to see that. And then what happens if they do find the bodies? They'll do autopsies on those, and they'll find out if they were still alive when they hit the water by water in their lungs or not. So they'll do these autopsies, and all of these things help figure out how did this happen and what went wrong. And again, the flight data recorder will have been recording everything, and the cockpit voice recorder. Now, the air traffic controllers didn't hear anything from the pilots, It's when they went from Greek airspace into Egyptian airspace, they are supposed to check in and, you know, basically say there, hey, we're in your airspace now. And they start talking to the air traffic controllers. That doesn't mean the pilots weren't there talking to each other. And there are a couple microphones in the cockpit. So if they were having a conversation like, what the hell's going on? The wall's on fire, stuff like that. It'll all be recorded in the cockpit voice recorder. So that'll tell us a whole lot of stuff. What's amazing to me and really fascinating to me is that people are so quick to jump on a bomb or terrorism and they know nothing about this. Airplanes, stuff happens, and it always has as long as we've had airplanes. So what I see when I see this is that it, collectively, we have been brainwashed to believe that this is one group of people, and they're the only group of people that could do such a thing, and that's very wrong.
Well, you know, prior to the 70s, really, and certainly 9/11, when, you know, airplanes were taken down by hijackers or taken down by you know, somebody that, you know, had untoward things wanting to happen to them, we had plane crashes, lots and lots of plane crashes, and they were all accidents, and they all figured out what it was that caused them. And they used that information to help, you know, do things to prevent that from happening again. But it's like today, if a plane goes down, there are no accidents. Everything was done, you know, on purpose. Either the pilots did it or
a crew member did it.
Somebody
did
it.
Or an Islamic terrorist did it. And, you know, people really just need to realize if you're thinking that way, you've been brainwashed by the media. And just slap yourself out of it. I mean, please keep in mind that main step that you really need to lift the veil of truth is that 10 of the hijackers are still alive and the other 9 were probably fictitious. So who did it? Who did 9/11? It wasn't 19 Arabs, okay? So it's nonsensical. But what I'm seeing now and what's happening is that this reporting on television is pushing us, nudging us, as Cass Sensing likes to say, in the direction of hating Islamic terrorists or hating people that are Muslim. And it's just, it's mind manipulating, man. You got to stop it. You got to just look at this. This is what I do. I watch TV to see. First off, I'm always interested in a plane crash because I lived in it. And I studied plane crashes for every year that I flew. So what I see is their agenda. And, you know, we have 86,000 employees at Charles de Gaulle Airport. And if you listen to these CIA agents on CNN, it could be any one of them.
Well, you know, one of the more insidious things that I saw when I was watching some of the coverage is they flashed up the pictures of the two pilots, and lo and behold, their first names were both Mohammed.
Yes, I saw that.
And, you know, and it was, and they didn't come right out and say it, but they were leading you to believe what, well, these guys are terrorists,
well,
obviously.
What they did to MH370.
That was horrible. But of course their names are going to be Islamic or something of that. I mean, they're from Egypt and they're Egypt Air pilots and they've been flying for, I think they said the pilot had 6,000 hours. 6,000 hours is a lot of time in an airplane.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, it just really rankles me to find the media coverage.
I'm
going to have a conversation with Brent Bozell about this.
Do, please. Tell him hi from me. So anyway, what I'm looking at now is you put together these incredible long lines that we just talked about on our last show, wasn't it? The two shows ago. We talked about that the TSA is overwhelmed and they're missing 95% of the bombs and the guns and the knives and all of that stuff that are carried through. And when I say that is that, remember, the airline employees that work in the terminal, ticket agents and such, they're asked by the FAA or TSA or whoever runs it all now, used to be the FAA, but they're asked to bring fake grenades or fake pipe bombs or fake whatever or knives or guns through and to test security. And they're still doing that, and they're missing 95% of it. They're telling us this. And I said, what they're doing is overwhelming the system because they're getting ready to show us that terrorists are here in America again right now.
Well, if you're going to miss 95%, can't you do it in 5 minutes? You don't need 3 hours to miss that stuff.
they are doing those lines to make it be an impossible situation because people are angry and the TSA agents are overwhelmed. They're overwhelming the system. It's a communist strategy, actually. So I'm watching this and I'm thinking, this is interesting. So then a little bit later on, I turned on the TV just to listen again to see what they're talking about, because CNN's covering this, I think, exclusively, as they do. And they're talking about how the TSA is showing us how good they are. Well, no, they're missing 95% of this stuff. And then how important it is that we all just shut up and take it. And that we're going to get in a bomb just like this plane. This plane was not bombed necessarily. We're just now finding the ping from the black boxes. We got to pull the black boxes up and then they have to be read. And all of this is very time consuming. So you have to understand too, why would the CIA be so involved and have all this information, especially that guy living in Telluride, Colorado? He's always standing there in front of the snow-capped mountains telling us what's going on in the Middle East. Makes you wonder about this guy, right? This is the CNN guy. And so I'm thinking to myself, why would the United States be over there involved in the recovery and all of this stuff? And, I got to getting my Google on last night, as I do. And lo and behold, if there wasn't a huge NATO exercise called the Phoenix Express 2016. You can Google search that. Phoenix, like the city in Arizona, Express 2016. It's a naval exercise by NATO. United States is definitely involved, and they were south of Greece, just a little bit north of where this airplane went into the brink.
And it included most of the Sixth Fleet.
Exactly. And so you have all these NATO countries involved. It's not just the United States, obviously. It's Algeria and Croatia and Greece and Italy, Malta, a bunch of the African nations. Egypt was not part of it. Turkey was, Spain and Tunisia. And so they're out there. One of the things they were actually drilling on was search and rescue. So this exercise started out May 17th, and 2 days later, this airplane went in the brink, and it's going on until the 27th of May. So we had all of NATO's search and rescue gear right there, coincidentally, kind of like coinkydink, kind of like 9/11 with FEMA right there to do a drill. So how many times do we get to see this? Now I start to see that, and I thought, okay, wait a minute now. Let me take my blinders off for a second and listen to this TV show again. And so I'm hearing them pushing how important it is that we, shut the you-know-what up and stand in line and go through whatever kind of body pat down, whatever kind of naked body scanner, whatever kind of...
Hotel Papa.
Whatever kind of abuse the TSA wants to give us and our families. And just shut up, because this is what's going to happen. And I'm like, my goodness, this is kind of starting to look like a real orchestration here. Now, I'm not saying that the airplane didn't just have a mechanical, but we got the Sixth Fleet there. And, remember when MH370 went down, the Seventh Fleet was on a drill right there. And that's the first thing I looked at after I found out they had enough fuel to go to Diego Garcia after they took that plane remote control was, what was going on there? And why? I just went to the Facebook page for the Seventh Fleet. And you too can go to their Facebook pages. Facebook's good, bad, and ugly sometimes. And they tell you right there, they're on this drill. Well, then not too long after that, I saw that one of the ships on the Seventh Fleet was testing a laser weapon. Well, lo and behold, you laser one of these airplanes, one of these fly-by-wires. And, if they took a laser weapon from the ocean, do you know where the avionics are located on the Airbus? Underneath the cockpit, on the belly of the airplane. If you were to aim your laser beam or your energy weapon up from the sea where they were drilling, you would set that on fire. So I wonder. I just, I have to look at everything. I'm not saying that it's a conspiracy, but it's convenient that it works in with the TSA hubbub that's been going on, and they told us it's going to get worse every day. And now they are already, I saw this earlier, a couple hours ago on CNN, LaGuardia Airport in New York, and I'm sure all the other New York airports will start, and the California airports are already tightening their security on us. On us. Now, there were no Americans on board the Egyptian Air airplane, and we are now helping with the search and rescue, obviously, because we're in the middle of a drill right there. So why wouldn't we send those P-3 Orions over there to look for, why wouldn't we do that? Because they were drilling for search and rescue. And they were also kind of doing something about how the immigrants were going. You know, maybe they could search and rescue some of them, because they go down and a lot of their little boats are tipping over and stuff. So when we go back to listening to the TV and they're talking about Charles de Gaulle Airport, well, let me take you back there to Richard Reed. Charles de Gaulle Airport, Richard Reed the shoe bomber, remember him? Well, he left from Charles de Gaulle. Well, lo and behold, I'm pretty sure they're still doing it. The security in that airport is run by ICTS out of Israel. Remember, that was the parent company of Huntley USA, who was running security at Boston, Newark, and Dulles on 9/11. I guess if you wanted to put something on an airplane and you were running security, well, it'd probably be a lot easier to do than for just somebody trying to go to Egypt to see the pyramids. So you got to take a look at the technology involved, and don't be fooled when they tell you that, oh, we're missing airplanes, and all of a sudden ISIS are now F-16 qualified pilots, fighter pilots. They're not. No, they're not. Stop it. Yeah, this is crazy. They cannot just pick up the keys and drive a tank. Somebody has to teach them how to use the equipment that we left behind in Afghanistan and Iraq. Everybody doesn't know how to fly. I can't get an F-16 or an F-anything and fly it. And so they're not going to do it either. They're not any smarter than I am. So it's just nonsensical. But sometimes I think they just throw stuff out there to think, is anybody listening? And do you really believe that? And we have, you know, all kinds of satellite data that's out there. And if none of that shows up to help us figure out that, in fact, maybe, just maybe, this was just a mechanical. It sounds like it to me from the ACARS messages and the fact that there was smoke in the cabin or in the cockpit or in the lavatory. Because one of the smoke detectors in a lavatory was saying smoke in the lavatory.
Well, nothing will shut CNN up faster than having it be some kind of a mechanical.
Well, yeah.
If the black boxes come back and report that, you know, this is what happened, they'll report that and boom, they're back to normal programming,
yeah,
and you'll never hear
Trump.
It again, because they want to talk about terrorism.
Terror. They want to scare you. They want you living in fear. Remember, we talked about this when we talked about being prepared. Oh, and I'm very, very excited because I was talking to a Facebook friend and I've had so much positive input from people, and I'm really sorry. No, I've got a PDF I was going to send someone, just a preparedness thing for your home and family. And I've just been super into this, finishing off this last section of this book and getting the everything put together, all the pieces, the quotes, and all the things that you have to put together. It's quite the project. It's a baby, but I'll tell you. Kind of like giving birth to it when they just send you the proof copy and you look at the cover finally in real life and it's really wrapped around pages. And then you look at your quotes and I was like, is that where I wanted this? Is it everything right? It is. It's just a lot like having a baby, giving birth to this little project. But this gal is a nurse and she wants to do a show together. And we can talk about how you can be prepared for things in your home, and you can do it on a budget. So we're going to put that together as soon as possible. Maybe I'll just pre-record the show and we can play it. So I don't know what her schedule is like. And just put together so you can get prepared for if there's an event and you need to hunker down, what you should have and things to think about.
So it'll be Ramjet live from Walmart?
Dollar store.
Oh, the dollar store. Even better.
Man, we're going to do this. We want people to be able to have no excuses. You want to go out and do this yesterday. So I'm kind of excited to put that together. So anyway, I'm happy to see that they have found the black box pinging, and I'm hoping they get them brought up soon. and that we can stop this crazy nonsense. And or just if you are one of those people that have been sitting there saying, it was a bomb, it was a bomb, it was a bomb, it was a Muslim terrorist, stop it and slap yourself. You have been successfully brainwashed by the television set. You need to walk away from it. Start reading and start thinking. Get out there and meet some people from the other walks of life. Don't just go to your church. Go meet some people that are wearing a hijab so you can go meet some Muslims. Women are really easy to pick out because they have a little cover on. So, and, you know, go see what life is like. Go eat at a Middle Eastern restaurant. Meet some people. Whatever it takes.
Now, that's a good idea. Eat at a Middle Eastern restaurant. Some of the finest food available if you get the right restaurant.
Yeah, that's very true. But, you know, I just think that people really need to be aware that the CIA controls the television set. They control the agenda. They are rogue, and they are out there doing things that will fry your brain to learn about. Trust me. So we know they had an involvement in 9/11, and we know that other intelligence agencies like the Israeli Mossad did as well. So we can't be surprised if we learn that they are ISIS, and that might be why ISIS never goes and kills the Jews or never goes to Israel, because it's a black operation. It's a rogue intelligence operation, and it has nothing to do with Islam.
And I think you're going to expose a little bit of that in your next book, I understand.
Yeah, don't give them too much now.
Okay.
Yeah, it's.
Where's my nine iron? I'll get back to the putting green.
Watch those guys. I mean, those alligators. Are they crocodiles or alligators?
What's alligators.
Alligators.
American alligators.
Oh, man, I tell you. They make shoes out of them, right?
Yep. Oh, that reminds me, you know, last week we were talking about some of these books that you're more than happy to give away. I think there's about 75 left is what I was told.
Oh, good.
And so if there's anybody that wants copies of The Methodical Illusion to give to libraries or friends
prisons
or whatever.
Someone's giving them to a prison library. I love it.
You're more than happy to have you contact Rebecca and just ask for those. There's no particular cost for them. If you want to pay the shipping, it's somewhere between $10 and $15 to ship 25 books. But we're happy to do that. So, here's how to get in touch with Rebecca.
Hey.
To contact Rebecca Roth, simply email your questions or comments to Rebecca Roth at RebeccaRoth.com. That's RebeccaRoth.com.
Oh, I like that.
And if that doesn't work,
fasten your seatbelt. It's going to be a bumpy night.
That is one of my very favorite lines from that movie. But anyway, we're just about running out of time here, so I'll be heading back down to check in with CNN and follow up on this. And as it's becoming evening on the west coast of the United States, it's becoming daylight, and the search just starts over there. So I think tomorrow should be really good news coming out of the area around Egypt from the Egypt Air flight. And if, in fact, they really, truly have got the pinging of the black boxes, it will be absolutely wonderful. Let's hope they aren't too deep.
Well, even when they get the black boxes and it may be terrorism, they're not going to know exactly who, what, why, or how. Because you keep in mind, nobody has claimed responsibility. Yeah. And that's very unlike the terrorists. If they do something, they generally raise the flag and say, you know, hey, look at me, I did it.
Yeah, well, and also, it depends upon how many parts of the fuselage in the airplane they can bring up and take a look at. Because if there's an explosion on the inside, it pushes the aluminum of a wall, the fuselage, out. If there is something else that's happened, if there's a burn mark somewhere or there's explosive residue, they'll be able to find that. So it's pretty amazing what the investigators can do with airplane parts when they put them all back together again. So that day, I'm very sad for all of those that have lost their lives and their loved ones. So thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week. Don't know what we're going to have on the burner, but that'd be good.
I'll be golfing.
Okay.
Chasing alligators.
All right.
And looking for a new place to host the show from.
All right. Get mobile, huh?
There you go. Well, that's the name of the game.
You're going mobile?
Going mobile.
All right. Sounds good.
Maybe I'll go to Mobile, Alabama. Who knows? You never know.
They probably golf there.
I've never been there.
Yeah. Well, put it on your bucket list, bud.
All right. All right. Thanks again. Take care. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.